Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. We have got an intense episode for you today. My guest is my friend Kedma, a nationally recognized business coach and somewhat of a therapist for entrepreneurs who feel stuck, but not by circumstance, more by their beliefs. In this episode, she coaches me live on the show with all the raw, relentless energy that earns her the love of her clients. I got pretty vulnerable and uncomfortable, and I learned a ton about my own limiting beliefs in the process, actually. And if you're feeling stuck in your own mind and you're ready for some real talk, then this episode, it's definitely for you. So let's dive in with Kedma.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less.
Kedma, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely love having you. You're a ton of energy and prepping for you and actually just getting to know you over the last year and a bit. It's been awesome. So stoked to have this conversation. We're going to get into limiting beliefs today. We're going to get into how it limits imagination. We're going to get into your story, probably my story a little bit too, if we need to. And we're going to talk about how to overcome these things and just be the best version of ourselves. Sound good?
I love it. I'm wondering if some people are already nervous, like, should I stay on? Should I listen? And I'm going to say yes, yes, and yes.
Yeah, you absolutely listen. I mean, you, unless you just like, you want to stay in your limiting beliefs, which some people want to. It feels safe. I know talking with you, prepping with you, you definitely opened me up a lot. And I was like, oh God, I don't want to have this conversation. But we did. So
we did.
Yes. Let's do it. So I think we should start because your story itself speaks, I think, to a lot of what it takes to overcome these things and in very real life situations beyond just business, but how it translates to our lives, both in business, both in personal. And so let's start there. I mean, what are some of the challenges from your childhood, the things that you had to learn to overcome, the very realness that even today it shapes who you are. And then let's get into some of these limiting belief things that we can all learn from this story.
I think this is the part in the movie where they put the certain ratings. So for anybody here who has young children, please move them out and we can just talk and be honest. If I was to be honest on my story, I would have to bring everybody back in time. So we're going to go back a few decades. And I would say my first recollection of my environment was, you know, I realized at a very young age, 7, I realized two things. One, I realized that, you know, somehow I was born into a horror movie. And when I think about movies, we all watch films and when we decide what film to watch, we're sort of like, we're in the mood for, right? Danny goes, we're in the mood for comedy or we're in the mood for inspiration. And sometimes we're in the mood for a horror movie. But when you're living out your life as a horror movie, you know, the realization is it's very rare that the victims ever escape. The other thing I realized is that because I tried to escape in my mind, and we talk about limiting beliefs, every time I would come home from school, the first thing I would do is I would run into the living room and I would turn on my favorite show, which was Linda Carter playing Wonder Woman. Now, the interesting piece to that moment is that experience actually saved my life and it plays directly into limiting beliefs. And I'll explain why. See, I used to watch that show and in hopes of someone coming to save us. And if you are someone who is experienced any kind of heinous abuse as a child or otherwise, you always hope someone will save you. This is what happens to children. They hope that someone's going to rescue it, whether it's an adult, whether it's a prince, or whether it's Wonder Woman. Except one day as I'm watching the show, I had this epiphany at age 7, Danny. So it's just me at age 7. Mm-hmm. The epiphany was I'm looking through the watching the show and the epiphany was, well, maybe I am Wonder Woman. And then I said, but if I am Wonder Woman, well, then of course the villain has to live in my house because you can't be a superhero
without a villain.
Exactly. And then I said, but if I am Wonder Woman and there's a villain in my house, well, then of course I have to rescue myself. Nobody rescues a superhero. Yep. And it would take me 10 years to escape. Now, at that moment that I realized it, that was the moment that changed my belief. Had I stayed in that limiting belief, I can promise you as the person I am today, I would never have made it out of that home environment.
What was the limiting belief at the time? It was just...
The limiting belief was that
I deserve this.
I couldn't escape my environment. Right. I had no way out. Nobody was coming to rescue me. I even had I had the realization that there was no longer hope. I literally had given up.
And there was abuse basically going on at home. And
this is heinous abuse. There's regular abuse and then there's heinous abuse. So severe abuse at all levels. And when you're at that point and you have no way to escape, you know, you either go two ways. You either check out of life or you find another solution. So my solution was, my belief system was, I literally at that moment clicked that I was Wonder Woman. And when I tell you it would take me 10 years to escape, it really did. Right around the age of 18, just to tell you the follow-up story, I was at a community college. I was trying to better my life. And it was winter time. It was New York, Long Island, very, very cold, January. And as I'm in the classroom, I get a 911 page from my therapist, Judy, who has never paged me. And because we don't have phones, and I have this pager, Danny, and I'm thinking, what is going on? And I remember the moment where I grab my books, I run out of the classroom, I run into the freezing cold air, I see a payphone. So I dart to the payphone, I call her, and I said, why did you page me? And she said, Kedma, you have to listen to me very carefully. He is on the way to the college right now. And if he finds you, he will kill you. Well, that was my villain.
Right. This is a very real life situation.
This is not make-believe. This is real life. This is my life. I hang up the phone. I go back to the parking lot, and I am already too late. I see a white vehicle pacing back and forth, lane by lane, literally hunting me down. And now I make a split decision, back to limiting belief, right? This decision was, I'm not going to make it out there. He's going to see me. I'm done. But then I said, split second, no, wait a minute. I'm a superhero. Again, it sounds very insane, but this is what happened. And in a split second, I said, I'm going to get on my hands and knees. And I did. I got on my hands and knees and I slowly crawled on the cold concrete to try to find my vehicle. I don't know how I did it, but I found my vehicle. I opened the car door. I got my books. That really was the only thing that I had that mattered to me. Retraced the step and I called back to the payphone to call the person at the time that I was seeing for help. And that is where my life changed forever, Danny. So I couldn't go back to the home environment. A group of friends found me a safe haven. Basically, it was a basement apartment in Huntington, New York. If you're a New Yorker, you know where it is. You had to go down 15 stairs. It was infested with cockroaches, and I would live there in hiding for 5 years of my life.
Hey guys, quick question before we continue the episode. If you could get a custom roadmap for growing your business in 5 minutes, would it be worth your time? After tracking the growth of over 1,900 contracting businesses since 2015, we've put together a 5-minute quiz you can go take right now that draws on a massive pool of data. You'll get instant access to a personalized report that's going to tell you which one of the four phases of contractor growth you're actually in right now. How your company stacks up in the 6 core areas of business compared with industry benchmarks. And what to go do next, including customized resources, tools, and templates you'll have access to right away. No waiting around for an email or filling out a million separate forms. The link is in the description, so go check it out. Now, back to the episode. So, because this is extreme stuff, and I think there are certain listeners that will hear this and say, I know this story. There are other people that say, that sounds really extreme. Maybe I don't have the same problems in life, but there's lessons in what you've done. And let's talk about this for a second, because there is a pattern of like, I'm going to fight against this and do extreme things in extreme circumstances to overcome this and not correct. Capitulate and not give in. And in correct. This circumstance, it is literally life or death. Not in all of our circumstances it is, although I think in business it can feel sometimes like it's life or death, although that's not true. Right. We feel that.
Right.
What are the core just like elements that you then brought forward to who you became today? Because there's a lot of career success. There's a lot of life. There's a lot. You changed who you are. And you built
1,000%. And actually, part of it is because of that, you know, there was a series of things, but it absolutely defined me. And if you've ever seen me present on stage, I'm always wearing a cape because it's my uniform. It is in my DNA. It is how I'm structured. So the first thing I've come to realize over and over again is once you set your belief system to be absolute, it is true on all sides of the fence. If you believe you are terrible with numbers, it is true. If you believe you will not be successful, you can manifest that to be true.
You'll create your own reality.
It is absolutely creation of reality. I'm working right now with someone who's absolutely amazing, multi-million dollar business owner, who came from a difficult childhood, and he believes that every single person he meets, check this out, every single person he meets, he believes at some point will betray him. And then he comes and tells me all these different timelines of every single situation in business and outside of business where they betrayed him. And I said, fantastic. You have manifested all of that.
Yeah. you know what's interesting? You have manifested all of that. To that exact topic, actually, in life, I'm a very trusting human being. I don't really see betrayal in my life much, and I don't experience it much. But there have been a few instances where I was nervous of betrayal. And by bringing that energy into the relationship, I was betrayed. And I was amazed that in all the other ones where I'm just like a puppy dog running through the woods, look, smelling flowers, and nukes are probably going off around me, but I'm just like, it's fine. And it is always fine. But there's been a few where I'm like, maybe it won't be. And then I'm nervous. I'm like, maybe it won't. And then exactly those scenarios are the ones that went wrong.
Because what your mind believes to be true is actually true. That's the beauty of it. It's almost like the painting of the picture begins in the thoughts and then gets manifested. And I can tell you positive things of where it happened.
Yeah.
When we talk about it. Mine is not only negative, positive thing. You know, I had to file, it is positive, but hear me out. I had to file bankruptcy for a very difficult situation, right? Another escape. But the positive thing is that in a way that was not possible, I had a chance to purchase my own office. I purchased it in 2008. Just to make sure everybody knows what that looks like. Typically, when you go in and purchase for, I'm a SBA broker, so Small Business Administration broker. Typically, when you put down for commercial property, you're going to put down a heavy chunk, 20%, 30%, and your interest is going to fluctuate. I don't know. Right now, it's like anywhere between 6 to 8%. All I had to do was 6% down, no financial validation needed, and my interest was fixed at 0.04%. Less than 0.5% interest. How did that come about? Well, it came about because of another belief I had. Literally a year prior to that, I was renting and I had met three people who had three different business cards. And every time I would look at the business card, I would say, wow, where'd you get this business card? And they would say, the first person said, oh, this guy, Eduardo. Then the second guy, oh my God, this guy, Eduardo. The third guy said, now after three things, I make a phone call. So I call this guy, Eduardo. I go down to his office. We have an amazing conversation and he tells me he wants to buy a place. I said, I want to buy a place. Let's get one together. He says, no, no, no. I'm from Cuba. I don't do business with anyone. And Danny, you know what I said? At that moment, he said that I walked out of that office and I said, universe, you can say universe. You could say energy. I don't care what you say. I said, universe, I want my own place. And I want Eduardo involved, whether he likes it or not. That's what I said. That's what I said. Now,
poor
hear
guy.
Me out.
Just get dragged into your reality.
Oh, yeah, because once you're in it, I'm a spider.
I noticed.
If you come into my web, you're stuck.
Know that you won't leave me. That's great.
Yeah, no, no. Yeah, Danny's like, oh, my God, wait a minute. Am I in Kevin the spider?
I know.
I'm in the spider. A year later, I had an opportunity of a lifetime. Someone came to me and said, I had filed bankruptcy. Someone came to me and said, Kevin, there's an opportunity with this city for you to get ownership for this property. I said, I can't. I just filed bankruptcy. I don't have that. They said, no. It doesn't matter. I said, what do you mean? You only need three things. You have to show you're in business. I said, I have that. You have to show you're profitable. I said, I have that. And you have to show you're doing community impact. I said, I have that. Well, I got into the lottery. There were only like six offices available. The first one was all retail stores. That wasn't eligible. The second floor was two and the third was the top. So I said, I'll take the second floor. I'll take this smaller one for $650,000. Now, here's the final piece. I'm in the office finalizing my paperwork for my office and in walks Eduardo. Now, I hadn't seen him since that time, a year ago. I go, Eduardo? He goes, Kedma? I go, what are you doing here? He goes, I'm buying an office. I said, I'm buying an office. He goes, you are? I said, yeah, I'm buying suite 201. He goes, I'm buying suite 202. So Danny, he has been my partner in crime since 2008. And we both own half of the second floor.
It's hilarious. And it's all your fault.
And it's all my fault.
So let's talk about this. We haven't gotten into your career as much, but like you have since moved into a pretty high level, like coaching career. You were mm-hmm. the head coach or VP of coaching operations, however you want to call it, for
House
Conquer.
Call Pro. Mm-hmm. And Conquer.
And Conquer and House Call Pro. So you've seen this not only in your own life, but with, I don't know, thousands of entrepreneurs. You've had a pretty good bird's eye view of this. And I identify this as like the undercurrent of everything. You can go tactical all day long, but there are things mm-hmm. like beliefs that are way more in control of how things turn out than all the tactics mm-hmm. in the world.
Right.
So for those listening, like how does somebody identify that they have a limiting belief? Because I also like even just prepping with you, like you drug stuff out of me that I'm like, I don't really want to talk about this. And I'm like, I don't want to acknowledge that it's even a limiting belief. It's like we can't see ourselves like others can. So how does someone self-diagnose and be like, these are the limiting beliefs holding me back? How do you identify them?
So let's start with the easy thing. The first thing I'm going to let everyone know so there's no confusion, okay? Your brain is always lying to you. That's fact.
It's trying to keep you safe, right? It's trying to keep you safe, I think is what it's trying to do.
That is why.
Yeah.
Your brain is always lying to you because most of the time its job is to keep you safe. Exactly. But your intuition rarely, if ever, lies to you. So the first thing you have to check is we have to go to the body because our experience and our limiting belief does not begin in the brain. It actually begins in the body. This is why when I'm coaching with people, business owners at all levels, people starting at 100,000, people who are doing 10 million, if they're going through a limiting belief, we start with the body first. Once we can channel through that, then we check with the brain. Half the time, I just tell the brain to just go on vacation. Hey, brain, you know what? Why don't you just go on vacation? We'll call you when we need you. Because so many times it's not serving. Now, I can prove why that is the case. Because if it was truly serving you, Danny, at the highest level, then we would not be having this conversation. Right. Okay? Simple.
It's interesting. So what you're talking to, I feel it as logically this, I need to go left, but
yes,
but my gut is what I call it. It's my intuition. Yes. My gut is telling me to go right. And I'm often listening to my logical brain. This is what I do anyways. And mm-hmm. there's a storm in me now. That's and I've gotten, and I actually feel it. I actually feel a physical, like almost pain, but pressure right here. But I can feel my body and my brain are not in alignment. And it makes me tired all day long. It makes me stressed, obviously, for obvious reasons. Right. And yet, if I don't listen to it for long enough and I just resort to working harder to fix the issue, I just burn out, essentially.
Then why do you listen to your brain first? Who made that decision?
Because I think there are times, and I'm talking about the times where I listen to my brain first. There are times when I listen to my intuition first.
You do?
But,
okay.
But here's the deal. And I think maybe people listening could resonate with this. When the stakes feel higher, you're like, should I really do this on gut? Because this is $1 million call. But oh, this is $100,000 call, or even let's even say $10,000 call. Let's go intuition all day long. Why not? But when you, for the first time, are making decisions you've never made before or getting into things you've never done before, maybe not everyone feels this way. I'm like, I need to go off my gut and my brain. And I get confused about how to deal with that.
So it's, again, it's very tough and it's different for different people, but you know, I'm not saying to just set yourself up and trust your gut without verification, but that gut is designed to really set you up for awareness that you don't have now. The problem we have with our brain, and I love my brain, okay? I love my brain. I love everyone else's brain. But our brain is limited by what it cannot see. And because it's so logical, it stays in that format. What I would challenge and invite you to do is that sometimes it's kind of like negotiation. So I don't know if any of your readers have ever read the book, Never Split the Difference. So I am a huge negotiator. I have negotiated probably since the time I was 5. Again, for many, many reasons, but I am a shrewd negotiator, and I will tell you about negotiation. Maybe this will help your audience. In the art of negotiation, you're going to come into a negotiation and you have things you want. And I'm going to come into the negotiation and I have things I want. But the reality is, in the real art of negotiation, the final negotiation has never been manifested yet. In other words, it is in that abyss, in that magic, in that imagination, that the real negotiation finalizes. And we could think and manage and manifest and all that, but the truth is that it happens at that moment. And so the same where you're saying, you know, do I do my logic or do my intuition? Again, you want, there's a place for both of them, mm-hmm. but they both play different roles and they're both necessary, and you still may be wrong.
Totally. And actually, I will say this, when you look retroactively, and I'm sure a lot of people resonate with this, but it's like, when you followed your logic and it went against your intuition, you often are like, that was the wrong call. And I've seen that time and time again. And I'm noticing that's like, I need to learn to trust my gut more as I'm getting older and as I'm getting more experience in business, but I'm not used to it. So I sometimes resort to not, but I look back a year, like from the decisions like a year ago, I'm like, oh, I totally knew that was not the right person to hire. I totally knew that that was not the right direction for the organization. And I didn't go for it because I didn't, it was the first time I ever done it. So I held myself back. And the limiting belief I probably struggle with is like, I'm not good enough. I'm not experienced enough. And so I just allow my logic to take over. And I'm like, okay, we'll just go with like, so this is an example. And actually on that note, what are the common like limiting beliefs? If you can label them.
I'm going to cover a couple of them. And okay. I want to be very clear here. Let's study society and then we'll go into it. Society is designed to give you very tactile, structured processes because it's a form of control. And it's much easier for me to teach you logic, data, and analytics than it is for me to teach you the art of imagination, the art of intuition, and the art of thinking out of the box. That's why when I'm spending most of my time growing, it's not with adults. It's with children. I will get more out of working with children and understanding the power of persuasion than I will ever get with adults. Because once you become an adult, the average adult has so little imagination and they're almost programmed, Danny, that even the word intuition does not resonate for them. So what are some of the limiting beliefs? I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not qualified to be a CEO. I'm not qualified to be a COO. I don't know numbers and I'm not qualified to do numbers. I'm terrible at relationships. I mean, you could go on and on and on. It's literally self-deprecation.
Project managers don't work. Hiring people is a waste of money. Hiring more people for my company is a waste of money.
Hiring a coach, waste of money. I mean, when
marketers are all liars.
Right. Exactly. You can't trust those people. And then it breaks down into cultural things. Like if we're going to be really honest, people have limiting beliefs on different cultures. You know, I don't like to bring in religion or anything, but there are certain cultures, even my own culture, where people are like, oh, you know what? You guys just know how to make a lot of money. Like, where did that come from?
Right.
Like where's the analysis of that? So there are so many beliefs there. And then the limiting piece is that it prevents you from being what? The total best version of you.
Yeah, you put guardrails around you to keep you safe, to protect you, but you put guardrails around you. So you don't have unlimited potential anymore. You have limited potential. Is that a good way to put it?
So let me just push back because I'm listening to you and I want to hear you. You said I've had issues where I say I'm not good enough. You just said that, right? Great. How many years have you said that to yourself?
Since I was a kid.
Since you were five?
Yeah. I mean, I failed grade four. So I remember that was like a big nail in the coffin for me where I was just like, I'm not good enough. Clearly, I failed. And
so how old were you at grade four?
I don't know. Five, you start school. So nine?
Nine. So now we're talking decades that you have said I'm not good enough.
Yep.
Great. And how has that prevented you from becoming the best version of you?
It stopped me from probably, I mean, everyone looks at Breakthrough Academy and says, wow, what a success. But I'm also just like, hey, there's so much more that could be and should be that I don't feel comfortable doing. Like the level of growth, the people we could be hiring, the initiatives that we could be starting, the money we could be spending on certain things, the role that I'm taking on within the organization. There's a lot of things that I'm like, yeah, but I don't know if I'm good enough for that. And I stay right. more in my comfort zone of what I know, which, you know, luckily for BTA, we grew up in a franchise system. So I know all things franchising. I know all things coaching and developing of people. But technology, I don't know technology very well. We've tried it a little bit and we've tiptoed into it. And as a result of tiptoeing into it, we spent a lot of money and wasted money on it.
Well, here's the good news. You don't have to be proficient in technology to be a multi-millionaire, okay? Mm-hmm. You're looking at someone who's a technical peasant. I know technology. I'm not as smart as my husband, who's chief technology officer, and I don't need to be because I surround myself with people who have their brilliance, right? What I would ask you and invite you to think about is this. One, on any given day, Danny, I can pull 1,000 people right now that on your worst possible day of your life would do anything to have your life.
I know this. Yeah. And this is what grounds me all the time is okay. just to know.
You're
yes.
privileged. And, yeah. Privileged.
You know how lucky I phrase it, Kedma? I'm like, so man, then, like we won the genetic lottery living in North America. And our, right. I always say, as long as I can eat, sleep, poop, and breathe, I am actually fine. And everything beyond that is a giant game. And that always brings me back to my normal kind of place, I guess you'd say. Yes. But it doesn't stop my brain from getting away from it all the time.
I get it. Yeah. And we love your brain. And now I'm going to speak to your subconscious and I'm going to invite your subconscious with something. Because when I'm doing a lot of business coaching and we do the KPIs and obviously because I've been, you know, I've been dealing with companies for so long, but we cannot segregate who you are and the business. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to say to your brain is this. I'm going to make it very logical. I'm going to say, hey, Danny, brain, we have acknowledged that you have not been good enough, right? You've been given this mark that you are not good enough for what? 20 years? 25 years? How many years are we going now?
30 years.
30 years. Great. Congratulations. In most state or national penitentiaries, 30 years is considered a life sentence. Okay. So you have been given a life sentence that you're not good enough 30 years. Now I'm going to ask your brain, should we keep you in that prison for another 30 years, or do you feel, brain, that Danny has learned his lesson and he can now unlock the prison key and get out of that state so he can be good enough?
Yeah, it's like giving yourself permission.
Is that literally have to unlock the prison. You have created a prison for yourself. I cannot unlock the key for you.
It's comfy though, Kedma. I've got couches in there.
Is it? Do you like your prison? What's it like in there? Is it cold?
Safe. It's safe, Kedma.
Is it safe?
It's
really?
A little cold. But you know what I mean, right? Cold. Because that's the challenge. And I want to get into this actually, because the reality is what you just described, there's two things going on when you're saying this. One is, yeah, I deserve to leave now and I need to give myself permission to move on. The objection immediately is, well, that's uncomfortable though. Right?
Okay. I don't mind keeping you there as long as you acknowledge that you're going to be willingly wanting to stay in that prison. So do you willingly want to continue to stay in the prison?
No, I'd like to move out. So
you do. Are you sure? Because we can keep you there for another year. I don't mind.
Yeah, there's a saying out there. You know what it is actually? What is this? What's you're comfy in your prison until the door gets shut and locked and then you want out.
That's right. So yeah. I'm going to lock it. I'm going to tell you, hey, I'm going to lock it for another year. Do you want to stay another year?
Yeah. No, if the option is that I can't leave and I have to stay in this now for a while, I want out now. But if I always think I can leave at any time, then I'll stay in for a lot longer.
Knowing. Yeah, but you've been there 30 years.
I know. So this, yeah, exactly. So can we talk about this?
We are talking about it.
I know we are. We're getting into like this next section I have, which is like, how do you shift from a limiting belief to more an imaginative state and break
through? So the way you do it is you have to give your brain a solution it could solve. Because what I have just done is I've introduced an image, and what we don't understand as business owners is to move from one solution to another is not through words, It's first through the image in our brain. If I introduce an image to your brain that your brain can connect to, then we can move you out. So instead of me saying to you, oh, Danny, you are good enough. Don't worry. You're amazing. That doesn't work because everybody before me has said that to you. True or not true?
Yeah. They encourage you. Great. Everyone wants to make you feel good.
I'm not going to encourage you. I'm not that kind of coach. Don't worry. I'm going to be like, you needed to be in there. I agree. Man, you know what? If it was up to me, I think you should be another 5 years. I don't know why. 30? Let's go for 35. Okay. Now your brain's a little bit frustrated. Okay. Why? I want to put you in for another five years. What about that?
Yeah. Because you're challenging me. You're putting me down. You're like giving me an ultimatum.
I'm putting you down. I'm just telling you, you should be in there. I agree with you.
Right. And now I feel like I want to fight you on that. Now I'm like, why? No.
Why are you fighting me? You just told me you're not good enough. I'm just saying you're right.
Why? Because you're opposing. Because you're
challenging the belief of your brain, and your brain can't handle it.
Right. You're confusing
me. I know already. I've been doing this for too long. Okay. So now your brain has. I'm playing chess right now.
I know you're playing with my brain.
Chess. I'm playing with your brain, and I'm going to checkmate. And your brain's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, I want to still play in the game. Okay. But now if you're going to play in the game, you got to make your move and I'm watching the move. So do you want to stay another year or not? If you say to me right now, I don't want to be in that prison anymore and I'm ready to unlock, your brain will then set the course for a different outcome.
Yeah. You're giving, not only are you giving yourself permission, you're kind of like telling your brain it's time. It's like, it's time to move. I've said this verbally out loud now. I'm verbally committed. Shoot. Now I have to go after what I just said.
That's right. Yeah. And this is why the blessing of confirmation has to happen in a public setting, because now it's not me you're accountable to. Every single person who's going to be listening to this is going to hold you accountable to it.
Right. Yeah, this is a lot of people. okay, so can we also, for the sake of this podcast.
Let's go through your brain right now. I know you want to go to comfort, the Linus in the blanket, and the questions. Let's pause. I know we're in deep coaching.
I'll let you take
what's me. Happening.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable. It's the reality that it's time to do something about something that you know. You're like, hey, I know this limiting, I've identified the limiting belief. I'm aware of it. I don't like to think about it often because I know it's just like not a productive use of my time, or I think it's not anyways. So I avoid it. Then you confront me with it. We talk about the option of not having it. You challenge me. I verbally am like, I'm going to move out of this publicly. And now I feel almost like a weight of responsibility. Maybe it's just I now need to do the work. Right.
Which now is, need to do the work. Yeah. And the other thing we don't realize is when someone is in prison, they think that it's a soul system where it's them that's being punished. But what you don't realize, Danny, and I'm about to tell your brain this, so hold on. You are not only punishing yourself, you're punishing everyone else around you. Because when you do not live your true highest version, everyone else around you is impacted by it. They're impacted by opportunity. They're impacted by the relationship. They're impacted by what could have been more. So like every other prison system, it's not just the person in prison that's impacted. It's everyone else close to you that's impacted.
Right. And that's and we even did this during our prep call, but that's the heavy punch. Because that's when you're like, about me anymore. This is about everyone around me.
Right.
And I feel more motivated to do something when I realize I'm impacting others than just impacting myself, which I think is true for most people, is it not?
Like, it's 100% true. And I do a lot of coaching for women. And one of the things, because a lot of times women are uncomfortable in challenging a situation and they will do this limiting belief thing that we're talking about. And one of the women who's right now, her company is doing 5 million HVAC, rock star. But I saw this happening in real time. And you know what I said to this person? I said, look, your decision to not stand up is not just about you. There's 1,000 other women right now that are coming right behind you that now have to face that situation because you didn't face it.
Right. And that's like hardcore accountability. That's just like,
that's hardcore.
I'm hurting others. Yeah.
Because if you don't do it, it's hurting it. So my invitation to you is to look around your world and how many people are waiting for you to show up and to get out of that environment.
Totally. Probably a little bit of everybody, some more than others, but I think a little bit of everybody for sure. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know you as well as your partners or your family members, but I can't wait. I'm like, man, this is driving me crazy. It's like waiting for a movie and you're like,
win. I mean, I'll speak to this a bit because we're on the podcast talking about this, but like, I didn't run the podcast for many years because I didn't think I was good enough. I was afraid of it. I was afraid of being publicly recognized and avoided it and hid, actually.
But Danny, here's what I love, and this is direct feedback. Danny, you are one of the most, forget about just kind, easygoing. People want to spend time with you. People love how you show up. You're doing a disservice to the entire world when you show up mediocre. That's the bottom line.
I know. And you said this to me in my prep mediocre? Call. I know. You said this to me in my prep. No, I don't. No.
Okay.
Well, you know what's funny, Kenma? When it's just for myself, I want to point this out because I'm also trying to do a podcast doing this to me. For myself, I feel more okay to be mediocre because I will hurt myself for whatever reason, for whatever logic that makes no sense, but I'll be okay to be mediocre for myself. The minute you bring in other people and you say that you're impacting other people as a result, it sparks something else inside of me that I'm like, that's not okay.
I got it. So this is good. Now here's where we're getting a breakthrough. We're going to graduate you out of the prison for not being good enough. And then we're putting you into another prison for being mediocre. So you're going to enter a new prison for being mediocre. That still is the same thing.
Yeah.
And the reality is that it's more hurtful for people to watch you go through this because they want to help you, but we know that you have to help you. Yeah. And yes, you're right. Every time you don't step into your greatness, it's impacting many people. Not one, not two, not three, many, many people. Because A, you're not modeling what it takes to stand strong.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had to go through this. This was me taking on the podcast with our marketing team, getting everything rolling.
I'm so glad you did. Because look, the truth is, and you know this, if you want to look at my background, I pick and choose what podcast I want to work with. I pick and choose who I want to hang out with because I'm at that position. I couldn't wait to work with you. But if you were egotistical or you were arrogant or you were a narcissist or you were anything that does not align with my values, I would have never, ever come to this podcast.
Yeah.
But I didn't choose the podcast because it was a company called Breakthrough. I chose the podcast because of a man called Danny.
Right.
That's what you have to figure out.
Yeah. What is it that everybody else is seeing in me that I'm denying myself?
Thank you.
Yeah. Kimmy, this is good. So, I knew this was going to happen when we did this together. Can we just for clarity, because I also want this to be valuable for everyone else. Can we break down what we just went through even a little bit? Like what?
Yes.
What are people?
We went through a very intense coaching session where I broke through some of the limiting beliefs, but I'm going to give this audience a very important gift. I'm going to talk about how at any given moment I can give you an absolute script to get out of the limiting belief so you can be free. But here's the caveat. You don't even know what I'm about to give you because I've been holding on the gift. If I share this gift with you and your audience, you can no longer show up as a victim.
Right.
Because I have given you the gift.
Right.
I have given you the playbook. And so I want to share this with you because it's such a great way. Because when some of you are listening saying, well, you know what, Kedma? Yeah, you know, you have what it takes. Oh, you have all those. You know what? I'm going to stop that right there because I'm like everyone else. But I want to share, if you're open to it, let me share one playbook that you can use at any moment for any situation. And we're going to actually test it now.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So, The acronym is called LEAP. I want to tell you how I came about. I came about dealing with this because limiting belief, I started to realize, was happening with companies and individuals who were at the $20 million mark and people who were at the brand new startup Mark. It was happening with people who were at the echelon and the highest level of society. And it was happening with people who were meth addicts. It was not discriminating. This is important to note. Limiting belief does not discriminate regardless of race, geographic, or social economic factors. It is happening across everyone's factor, okay? So I started studying the movies and I said, I want to create a process called LEAP. And it's very simple. In any scenario you're in, so right now you and I, Danny, we're in a scene. So imagine this was a movie. We're in a scene together, okay? But the cool thing is that scenes change all the time. You have hundreds of scenes happening daily, but we're in a scene right now. And now I'm going to walk you through. Let's suppose you are and I are in a scene and you're not comfortable. You don't like it. It doesn't make sense. There are only four ways to play any scene, to leap from one movie to another or one scene to another. The first is the easiest, and it's L. And L stands for location. Why is this important? Because in any scene, if we're doing something you're not comfortable, you have the right to walk away out of the scene. Sure. And what does that look like in life? You could say, hey, Kadma, I want to take a pause. I'm going to go and take 15 minutes and go outside. You can also say, hey, I don't like the work environment. You could say, hey, you know what? I'm making a decision. I'm leaving the company, right? I'm moving my location. Maybe you don't like your city. Hey, you know what? I'm moving from Edmonton to Calgary or from New York to Chicago. That's the easiest, believe it or not. The rest of them are a little bit harder, okay? But at any point,
you can leave.
You can do it immediately. Second, the hardest one is emotions. Now, let me explain this. If you're studying the art of any movie, you know that the movie calls in any scene for emotions. So let me give you an example. Let's suppose in the scene, I'm not your wife, but let's suppose I'm your wife. And you walk in and you find out that I'm cheating with your business partner. This is not true. Don't put this on Facebook.
Don't clip this.
Don't cut this and say, oh my God, I just found out there's an affair happening. This is not true. This is an example. You would feel betrayed. You would feel angry. You would feel frustrated, right? You would just feel like, what has happened in my life? And that's what the scene would cause, right? That's what the scene would act for. However, in the art of emotions, if you're aware of it, you can change your emotions within the scene. So what if you, instead of betrayal, you felt gratitude that now you found? Mm-hmm. You found empathy because you know what? You didn't realize how miserable I was in the relationship. So you're changing the emotion.
Can I speak to that actually? Because if I felt gratitude, I'd be lying to myself. And that's bullshit. But if I felt empathy, that I could see a path to.
Exactly.
So it has to be a legitimate emotion.
It has to be legitimate. Can't fake it.
Yeah. Because I've heard this before in people where they're like, just think positive and just be happy. And
No.
I'm
it
like,
has to
you know
be
what?
Real.
There is, when you lie to your brain like that, that actually creates a worse version of yourself because you hide behind a mask actually. But when, what you just said about empathy is a really powerful one because like I could be empathetic for the pain that must be going on in my relationship and that whatever it is right. That's caused that. That's it. That's a legit path to a different emotion,
right.
Which is what your point is.
And you have to be aware of it. So in the scene, because remember, we're in a scene, you can, because you're aware of it, your brain's aware of it. You could say, what emotion do I want to play? Even though the scene calls for, I could switch it. You know, many years ago in one of my companies, I was betrayed by my manager. Embezzlement at the highest level. And they got away with it. Now, I could have been angry. I could have been disheartened. I could have said, I hate people. I could say never to have a partner again. But you know what I did? I did exactly that. I felt really empathy, like almost to the point of pathetic, but empathy like, wow, like what to do this to someone, like you must be really at a low level in life because I'm going to get better and I'm going to fix things and I'm going to have better partners. But I would never want to have that on my heart, like never. Right. So that's why emotions is the hardest. The third one, you're going to love this, is A for actors. You see, everyone in my life is only an actor. Now, the way we play with actors is a couple of ways like we do in movies. You can bring in an actor, you could take away an actor, or you can demote an actor. But the actors play in the scene. Now, some actors are here for life, right? Your children, your parents, maybe your partners. And some actors are just here for a moment. So who in your life is an actor?
I mean, my wife is an actor. My kids are
actors.
Your
wife is an actor.
Right. My business partner, my staff.
Right. Also, the person you just went shopping and got something at the grocery, they're an actor, but they're just kind of like, you know.
Their background scene.
They're a background actor. Yeah. Right. But there's an important piece to that because it goes to the last one, which is props. Props are, in our world, anything with education, resources, or information that can better our life. So if you're in a situation and you say to me, I want to learn AI, the prop could be an AI agent, but more often than not, you need an actor. Because then you're going to say to me, okay, who do I know? Where do I go? Who's the consultant who has it? Who has the knowledge base? So more often than not, an actor and props work hand in hand.
Work together.
Now, the last thing I want to tell you, which is the most important one, and you're going to tell the audience where you stand with this. This is the most profound one. The final piece to the verdict is this. We have to determine what role you are playing in the movie, and I will tell you all the roles, and then you will tell me the role you're playing right now in your life. The first role is you are the producer of the movie. In order to be a producer, you must be producing at all levels. You are not actually acting. So you're not like getting tied into the emotion. You are producing it. The second one is you're directing it. You're directing the scenes. You're directing what's happening. But you're not, again, emotionally tied into it because you are the director. The third one is lead actor. And I can give Academy Awards to how many lead actors I meet. But lead actors do what they do best. They are so immersed in the scene. They are acting in the scene. They are leading the scene. The next one is supporting actor. They're not even a lead actor in their own movie. They are literally a supporting actor in their own movie. And the final one is an audience member. And the audience member is sitting there eating popcorn and saying, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. Who actually is running this movie? Nobody. Because you are in the audience. So which role are you playing today in your own movie?
The audience member. I'm observing.
Where do you want to be?
The director or a director?
Absolutely a director if you're not a producer. So now I just gave your brain a roadmap. Right. So you now know. So now we're going to take any situation. So let's just play. Like, give me a difficult situation. Nothing confidential. Maybe something even a couple of years ago. Doesn't have to be breakthrough. Just a hard situation you went through just to show the audience how quickly we can resolve the problem.
I mean, I can give you a very personal one that's still, but it's 10 years ago. It was the start
of. Let's do it.
It was the start of Breakthrough Academy. I was College Pro Painters for 8 years. Ran franchises, did the whole thing, learned lots. I was 26 years old and I was thinking about starting Breakthrough Academy, but I was too afraid to, because I was like, I'm 26 years old. Like, who's going to listen to me? So I resorted to going to work with somebody else who was running a training organization. And I was like, I'm going to go work with them and maybe I'll get ownership with them over time and I'll build into their organization. And hey, like, they're older than me. So like, they can lead the way and it'll be safer. And that belief of I'm not good enough was what led me down that path. And so for 2.5 years, I worked with them and it was that feeling I was telling you where I'm like, my brain and my intuition are fighting. I was feeling that tension every day. I was like crying going to work half the time because I was just like, I am not doing what I truly need to do. And that there was no action happening because I'm so bloody loyal. I'm just like, I committed to this. This is the path I said I logically am going to take to get to this idea of Breakthrough Academy. Where I want to run a coaching company and I want to do all these things, but I wasn't able to be in the driver's seat because it was under somebody else's world, right? And so I was denying myself this, what we created over the last 10 years, because I was too afraid to. And my excuse was I'm too young and I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm. And so what happened from that?
Well, eventually I broke. Actually, it's funny. I got fired actually at the end of 2.5 years. But it was the best thing ever because the day it happened, all that pressure that was built up inside of me where I was denying what I really wanted to do was gone. And I was not fearful. I remember texting Igor, my business partner now, and I was like, I just got fired. He's like, congratulations. And I was like, right. It's time to go do what I've meant to do the entire time. And that you just said the scene where it's like I'm sitting in the audience with popcorn. I'd been sitting for 2.5 years crying, eating popcorn, watching the sad scene play out. And finally I was in the, I guess, producer role, you said. I was in the driver's seat. And I was like,
you were actually in the director's seat or the producer, but you were forced into that. And very rarely do we kick people out of the audience, but you were kicked out of
kicked
the audience.
I was forced. You were kicked out of the audience. Because I'm a stubborn son of a right. And it was the best day ever. And I remember the feeling.
It was
feeling.
The best day ever.
It was the yes. feeling of like freedom and my imagination could finally grow again and I could finally go after all the things I thought I should do without any barriers. And I also remember the responsibility of like, I got my wife and a 6-month-old child and all these things. But I was also like, I remember going home to my wife the day I got let go and I was like, I'm doing this.
Amazing.
She's like, are you nuts? And I was like, no, but you understand, like, I can't not anymore. Like, I'm free. Let's go.
Exactly. So now I'm going to ask you, now we're going to go back and we're going to take a moment. We're going to go back to the time because it took a couple of years before you were sitting yep. in the audience. It yep. was going, we're going to go back to 2 years prior before you got fired.
Okay. Yep.
And I'm giving you leap now and you're miserable. You're unhappy. It's not right. Which option would you have chosen and why? Would you have done the location move? Like, I quit. That's location. I quit. I'm done. I'm moving somewhere else. Would you have switched your emotions? Would you have brought in actors, like brought in your partners? Hey, let's get together and talk. Or would you have gone for training? Hey, let me learn this kind of role. What would have been your next move?
I mean, what I did at the time was I changed my emotional state around it because I just changed my mindset.
That's exactly what you did.
Yeah.
But what I would have said is, and then you would have wanted to bring your actors and props maybe beforehand. You would have maybe wanted to call your partners way before getting let go and say, hey, guys, let's have a meeting. Let's put this together. Let's have some thoughts. It still was a great outcome, but it may have had less friction.
It was one of the most friction times I've had in business.
Right, because you were an audience member.
Yeah.
And you know what? This is what I love about the work I do. If someone wants to be an audience member, once I teach them this, great.
Yeah, but at least they're aware of it now and they're not able to just.
Exactly. What I will do is just send them popcorn. Like, hey, as long as you know, I'm cool with it.
Kevin, you should send people popcorn.
I do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
No, I don't play around. What part of this is scripted?
It's very Dan Kennedy of you.
No, none. Of course I do. Listen, I'm always thinking that way because I'm producing. I'm producing in my life. I'm living it out and I want people to do that. But at this point, it's then their choice. Mm-hmm. You can't have choice if you're not aware.
Right. Yeah. If you just think this is my, again, the limiting belief, this is my reality.
The limiting belief. Yeah. You are not aware. There's no choice. But if I make you aware, I've given you choice, which is why I say once I give you the roadmap, the blueprint, you can't come back to me and say I'm a victim. Because when you come back to me, I go, which part of Leap did you make a decision with? And are you a director right now? What are you playing right now? Right. And it's phenomenal. And I live my life that way. This is how I live my life. So just for the audience members, yes, we're in a scene. And yes, Danny's an actor. And I want him to be with me as a colleague for a long time. He's not leaving the scenes for a long time. Right. But with other people, I may decide, you know what? I don't want him in my scene anymore. I don't want him in my movie anymore. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a great way for you to take control back because in the audience position, you have no control, Danny.
Right. You just have to hate the movie.
You have to hate the movie.
Yeah.
But the sad thing is you keep watching it.
Yeah, I know.
You're like, why is this happening?
Because it's a comfy seat.
I don't know if the seat is even comfortable. Probably have stale popcorn.
I think what I'm pointing out is there's comfort in just like not trying to fix it because it's what you're used to. It's uncomfortable to do something you haven't done before.
Exactly.
Yeah. And which entrepreneurs we do all the time. Like we'll do tons of things we're uncomfortable with and we put ourselves into really uncomfortable situations. But there are certain things where we're like, except for that, you're not touching that corner of my life.
Danny, you and I are thinking the same way. If you are happy living out your life the way it is, I'm cool with it. Just don't complain.
Yeah. And if you made it to this point of the podcast, you probably have some you need to work on.
Well, I wish they would send in some audience questions so we could just, you know, respond
I've
back.
I've been thinking that I would love to do a live call-ins one
I
day.
Think we should do a live one. I format. Think it would be fun. And I think it would be fun to ask and get really serious about things because, you know, You know, I know what it's tough, guys. I'm not saying this is easy. I don't think betrayal is easy. I don't think abandonment is easy. You know, I have been unfortunately blessed to have a lot of things happen in my life that has put me in this position where I have to say to myself, I get to control the outcome. At least from what's possible.
The key thing is you get to say to yourself. Because some people just, they don't realize they get to say that to themselves. And so they sit in it. And AKA, like I should say certain people, me too. It's like, all of us have choices and options. What do you think about this one? This is one like other motto I've lived in my life. And again, I can do a better job of probably living it out every day. But I'm like, man, we are not a product of the things that happen to us in life, but we are very much a product of the decisions we make through that.
100%.
And it's like, just remembering that. It's like, I chose this.
Well, it reminds me of, I'm going to give an analogy just because it speaks so truthfully to this. You and I could be in the same experience and see it completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Same experience and see completely different. So I'm going to tell you the most profound one that happened to me about 5 years ago. I took my husband as a gift to Venice, Italy. Now, if you've never been to Venice, Italy, I hope you've seen pictures of Venice. It's absolutely gorgeous and it's a romantic city. Well, when I arrived, I said to my husband, why don't we grab some postcards? I'll write one to my mother and you write one to yours. So I wrote this to my mother's. I kid you not. Dear mom, we have arrived in Venice. Mom, I think I've died and gone to heaven. I mean, the gondola is so romantic and the buildings are gorgeous. The food is scrumptious and the people are amazing. I love Venice. Your daughter, Kedma. Then I said to my husband, hey, can I read what you wrote to your mom? We're in the same city, Danny. He writes, dear mother, we have arrived in Venice. With the stench that is happening, it's disgusting. The gondolas, they're falling apart. The buildings, someone should just come in and tear them apart. The food, at best, mediocre. I can't wait to leave. Your son, Cameron. I looked at that postcard and I looked around.
Are we in the same place?
I said to him, are we in the same place?
Yeah.
And he said, yes, we're in the same place. And at that moment, I learned the most powerful lesson that two people can be in the exact same experience and see the exact same things and have two different moments.
Yep. Perception, I think about it as like colorblindness. Like you can see something as red and somebody else sees it as blue or whatever the colorblind cone rod thing of that. But that's life as well. That's life experience. And it's your experiences up to that point that have led you to perceive things a certain way. Where somebody else perceives it. So I see risk and somebody else sees opportunity is an example in entrepreneurship. And what you're speaking to and what we've been talking about this whole time is like confronting some of these limiting beliefs that have been controlling the narrative of how we see reality around us.
Yeah.
To take action or take the driver's seat on these things and start to shift them. So we don't see the smelly Venice. We see the nice, beautiful Venice. And an analogy for a business is like we see the opportunity within our organization and our people and the things in front of us so we can actually be the best version of ourselves and not sit and throw popcorn at the movie.
Well, and you're not going to forget that. He's going to be having popcorn. He's going to be at the movies like, wait a minute, is this my life? Wait a minute, what movie is this? Here's a real thing. And, when you talk about limiting beliefs, how many of the people that you and I work with day in, day out say they cannot pass any other information or training or support because they're the only ones that can do it better than anyone else?
Totally. Yeah. How could you help me in this? I'm the best technician you've ever seen.
I'm the best technician.
My industry is a little different than yours. Like, I don't think you would understand. We're too small for this. We're too big for this. I don't have enough time,
exactly.
Which sometimes can be true actually, but like you need to work through how to. Anyways, like there's a bunch of like things that I get to see from a bird's eye view that you're right. Like when you work with people in an industry like you and I do, we get to poke fun at it and kind of like say, hey guys, like it's like, and so other people listening be like, oh man. But the reality is that's true for all of us. There's somebody that can overlook you and me and all the dumb things we do. And
exactly.
Like you did with me today a bit and just say, hey, you're also in it too, bro.
Yeah. And I think what I would say is that you have the opportunity to just challenge everything you're doing. You know, so many people say, oh my gosh, I wish I could travel. I'm like, I travel all the time. They're like, yeah, but I don't have this. I don't have that. I'm like, well, all you have to do is book the ticket. Like, just let me show you how to do it. Let's get on Google and book the ticket. Like, it's really obvious, but it's not for them. Why? Because in their mind, they have to do this and that and that and that and make sure everything. And again, it's all limiting belief. Mm-hmm. It's all limiting belief. For me, you know, there's so much to unpack here. And what I would say is a gift you can offer yourself is the first thing I would ask for everyone, including you, Danny, is write down. Don't ChatGPT this, please. ChatGPT does not know your life. OK, just write it down on a piece of paper. What does the ideal life look like for you? And then write down, what does your current life look like?
I did this actually recently. I had a men's retreat.
And what happened?
It's starting to shift. I'll give you another limiting belief of mine is that I have to work hard to be successful.
Okay, great. How many hours do you want to work?
Exactly. And so I wrote down.
I'm going to put it into your brain. How many? Do you want to work 70, 80 hours a week?
I actually have I have a life schedule that I would love to live in. Yeah. So the life schedule is 10 to 2, Monday to Thursday. And to allow myself to do really good work through the day and then be there for my kids. And then having Friday as a creative space day, whether it's a hike or just a time to think and process.
Right.
And then weekends always, which has been beautiful. We've always taken more or less weekends through.
You want to work 10 to 2, Monday through Thursday and Friday creativity.
And I want to, and I want to maintain the trajectory of all the things that are going on in the organization.
Yeah. And then how many hours are you working right now?
8 to 6, probably.
8 to 6. Do you want to work more? Do you want to do 8 to 7? Or are you okay with 8 to 6 right now?
No, I don't want to do more. Okay, I could if I had to. I have done more. I've done 7 to 10 a night.
No, I just
want
to set the cadence.
What I've noticed is like much more than 8 to 6, your productivity moves down the next day and you're like affecting your ability to be productive the day after. And I'm curious, and I have this little candle that my coach guy gave me, but it's like, what could be is, I think I remember, it's like, what could be in your life and versus like, what is, right? And so that, and I wrote, what did I write? I wrote my 90-year-old self. He actually ChatGPT'd an old image of me and then basically had me as that person writing to my current self. And then he had my teenage picture of me that I sent him writing to myself and then looking at the reality of where I've come and where I'm going and start to identify like what reality could look like. He's also the same guy that had me write my own obituary. And then
I love this guy.
Yeah. John DeWall. He was on our podcast a while. He's awesome.
I love it.
But go ahead. I started to see what reality could be and realized at some point I have to start working towards that. I could just read it and then that's it. Or I could this week, this month, this quarter, start to do little things so that when I am that age, that is real. And it doesn't have to happen tomorrow. But it doesn't need to not start, like it can start.
Yeah. First of all, I love, love, love this for a couple of reasons. I'm a recovering addict, to tell everyone full disclosure. I'm 30 years recovering as an alcoholic, but I am a travel addict now. And I don't go to Travel Anonymous. When I say I'm a travel addict, I literally travel as much as once a month. I spent a month on my own in Koh Samui, Thailand, because I said to my husband, hey, I feel like going to Thailand. You want to come? He says, I can't come. I go, I'll send you a postcard. And literally 2 months ago, I spent a month in Thailand. And next week, I'm going to be spending a couple of weeks in Italy. I will be going there to Florence and I will be going to Rome. And here's my point. I'm not special, but I want to make it really clear. The amount of hours you produce does not mean that you're productive. Mm-hmm. It could mean you're busy. So if we want to get to the root of where we can get you down to 10 to 2 from just 4 hours a day and be really productive, I would first want to look at and this is for everyone listening, because I do this day in, day out. I would take every single task you're doing, and I would equivalent a price to it. So typically we have tasks that are $15 an hour or under, and that goes to a virtual assistant. We love our virtual assistants. We support our virtual assistant. I've had virtual assistants for 15 years, but you should not be doing something that's $15 an hour. Then we look at your next series of tasks, $50 an hour. Then we look at 100. Then we look at 500. And then we have to get you to 1,000. At the level of partnership you are for your company, I'm going to tell you right now, you should not be doing anything like that less than $500 an hour in tasks.
Yeah, and that's
about
right.
If you are doing anything less than that, we're going to change that conversation, because that's where we're going to buy back your time. and I have a suspicion you're not doing $500 to $1,000 an hour in every aspect of what you're doing.
God, no. Nope. No, not at all. No, there's, it's a pursuit to do that. And there are absolutely capitulation to that pursuit on a weekly basis.
Great. So what we take is we systemize it. So let's take my cleaning company. If I called my cleaning company today, right? So I own Superb Maids in Portland. And then obviously, you know, I'm you know, COO of Ninja VA. But if I called right now Sarah and I go, Sarah, I am inspired and I would like to come and clean right now at someone's home. Sarah is trained. She is one of our virtues that she is trained to say,
no,
Coach Kedma, we love you, but we cannot afford to have you clean in this company. You are not permitted to. And I am the owner of the company. The same with estimates. What I love about the Genius Zone is, first of all, there's no doubt, Danny, we can get you there fast. Like, you don't have to wait a year, 2 years, 5 years. But it does require a full tactical analysis of what is each task worth, and are you the one that has to do it?
Right.
Where you have to, you know what this time we're doing right now, do you know what that's worth? $1,000 an hour.
Right.
$1,000 an hour. And nobody can do it better than you.
Yeah, it's high productivity, high leverage time. Being
high leverage time.
Yeah.
For thousands and thousands and thousands of people that are going to see this. And I'm telling you right now, because I've seen this happen, the people who are watching this that are still listening to this, if they follow the formula, and if they're not listening, they need to re-listen. They can literally change their life overnight. It's literally a trajectory. You're not too far off from massive success. It's not like decades away. It's a few changes in your life.
It was pretty neat to prep with you. I'll say that. Of all the prep calls I've done since I've started this, that was the most impactful one because you because you attacked me in the right way. It was like you actually like made progress with me during a prep call, going through the process that we just kind of exemplified today. And it left an impact on me. And I realized I was like, that was like 45 minutes, I think we had a call for.
Yes.
It was pretty neat. And I don't have that often. So like that, and that's also why I was excited to have you on, because I was like, this isn't bullshit. This isn't like, hey, limiting beliefs, feel good about yourself. It's like, no, there's a real process that you walked us through today and walked me through even that I do think has quite an impact on the human brain and creates change in behavior. It's still, absolutely, you have to go do the work, like everything, but it's the right way to step your brain from limiting beliefs to acknowledging you have them, to attacking them, to be able to give yourself an actual, like, create your own reality, like you get to create your own future. You get to design your life.
Which was my storyline in my TED Talk.
I know. This is why I watched the TED Talk, accomplishing
your beliefs.
Totally.
Right? It's like accomplishing your goals. So yes, I think what I want to speak to, and this is important for anyone listening here who says, I would love to be on this podcast. It's one thing to come and sell, and I'm not a seller. It's another thing to show your craft in real time to someone who's working with you. And that is the greatest gift you can give someone. If I can pass my craft, my genius, my knowledge, my experience, and make your life better, that's what I want to do.
Totally. I call it the prove it process. You can go and tell someone or show someone all the different things that you can do to achieve a result for them, or you can just do it.
I love it. And what's it called? The pudding process?
Prove it. Like, prove it process. Like,
oh, prove it. I was
like,
if I'm
going to sell
pudding?
Someone, I can like show them how, I could tell them how, I can make promises. I could challenge them with like numbers and like,
process. I love that.
Or I could just fix the issue and help them in the moment and let them be like, do you want to do more of this? And makes sense. It's a good little nugget. Kedma, how do people reach out to you?
A couple of ways. Well, first of all, I hope you will welcome me back. I would love to have more conversations, and I would welcome anybody who has any thoughts. Couple of ways. Our website, ninjava.com. You can literally key in Kedma on Google. You'll find me. If you find another Kedma, run. Or you can find them through you. So I always say go back to the source. I would love to have more conversations and help people at any level. So, and it's been a privilege working with you. Well, let me tell you why. Strength doesn't come from arrogance. Strength comes from humbleness. and the ability to be aware of areas that we want to improve, and for anybody to show up and say, hey, this is what I'm working on, especially publicly, like, there is so much respect I have for that and many other people. And I hope this opens up a conversation for a lot of your audience members to say, you know what, I want to take that first step. I want to have an honest conversation. Because here's my rule. If you have to lie, then go ahead and lie to everyone else. But the one person you cannot lie to anymore is yourself.
Yeah. The what could I say about this with everybody? The reality you live in when you don't face your is far worse than the momentary embarrassment or the whatever of facing it. Yeah. And I think there is, I will say this, like, I am intentional sometimes to be very raw and real because I've noticed that it gives other people permission to do the same. And I really want to be in a world where we work in business in a very genuine, real way. And I hate being in business when everything is transactional and everybody's like saying half truths and there's always like,
yeah,
and nobody likes that, but everyone thinks that you maybe have to do that sometimes to be successful. I think that's changing. I think it's bullshit. I think especially in small business.
Yeah.
And I'm always excited to like, hey guys, like, we don't have to be this way. Like, we don't have to be this way. Let's be better.
And also, I do believe in, you know, if I help you win, it doesn't mean you have to help me win. So the other way they can find me is Facebook or LinkedIn. I have 40,000 people on LinkedIn. So if there's someone that connects with me and wants to connect with someone, like, I'm also happy to do that. But I think just be present.
Mm-hmm.
Just be present. And yeah, it's been an honor. It's been so much fun. And I'm just, I feel very blessed to just be invited. So thank you. Thank you for having me. And hopefully this, you know, left some kind of, you know, thoughts for people to think about.
I think there are more than a few that are going to get a lot out of this. So thank you, Kedma. This was great.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good one. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.